All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is May 19th, 2026. And our top story today is the South Koreans have gone full FOMO. Never go full FOMO. Never. Never. Margin debt in South Korea has hit an all-time high, up 33% just since the start of this year, as South Koreans have borrowed money to pile into stocks at all-time highs. The KOSPI index, the big Korean, South Korean tech index, has nearly tripled in the last 12 months. And so South Koreans have said, I know, let's borrow a bunch of money and buy all the way up here. But wait, there's more. Gets even better. There's an article today. The South Koreans have started cashing out their life insurance policies to buy stocks. Not only have they borrowed money, not only have they drained their savings, now they're selling their life insurance, all to pile into stocks that have tripled in the last 12 months. If only there were examples of, you know, people going crazy, speculative manias, irrational behavior at the top. I mean, if only history was freaking loaded with examples of this going horribly wrong. Oh, look, that's just in time for memory stocks to sell off about 14% over the last 5 days. Isn't it funny how that works? Now, let's put that in perspective. Those memory stocks are up like 300% in the last year and a half, because Sam Altman and co. have gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and bought up all the freaking memory in the world, driving up the price of everything from cars to cell phones and computers in the process. But that kind of a market dislocation will not last. And the market's starting to realize it's not going to last. Hey, it's nice. We're making money hand over fist, but it's temporary, transitory even. Just in time as this is going on, the Seagate CEO is out saying that it would take too long to ramp up capacity to try to build more factories to capitalize on this memory shortage. All right. Oh, it's interesting. It would take too long. Allow me to translate that for you. What is the Seagate CEO really saying? He's saying this isn't going to last. He's saying I would be stupid to do something like borrow money or sell my life insurance to build a factory to produce more chips, because by the time that factory is up and running, this bubble will be no more. And we'll be stuck holding the bag on a factory with excess capacity. So the CEO of one of the biggest memory companies is saying this isn't going to last, right? As the South Koreans are borrowing and selling everything they have in order to buy stocks at all-time highs. And as this is going on, you've got the backdrop of some of the fastest growing public backlash I've ever seen. And I've been warning about this, guys. When I saw the power bill start going up late last year, I said by election day, data center is going to be a four-letter word. I've said it over and over again, and it's happening faster than I could have imagined. The backlash against data centers and all things AI is growing by the day. Oh, my God, that video. If you haven't yet seen the video of Eric Schmidt, the Google CEO, getting booed off the stage at the University of Alabama, or was it Arizona? I think it was Arizona. Stop what you're doing and watch that video, unless what you're doing is watching this video, then watch that video upon completion of said video. But I digress. Yeah, the public doesn't want this stuff. AI bros, everybody hates you. You're using our money through accounting frauds to build this technology that is driving up our power bills. And then you're telling us if it works, which it probably won't, but if it works, it's going to put us out of a job. And you wonder why people hate you? Of course they hate you. I'm telling you, all these data center projects that are in any district, you've had whole town councils get recalled over the approval of data center projects. The politicians at every level see that. They will start lining up against these projects, this bubble. The days are numbered, just as everybody is selling their life insurance and borrowing money to pile into it. And all this is happening against the backdrop of a consumer that has never been worse off. And this is pretty, we got Home Depot earnings. They were flat, comp sales up 0.6% for the year, which against a backdrop of 3.8% inflation, that's dreadful. That's a big decline in real sales. Frozen housing market, we've seen this before. Consumer budgets, people putting off on big projects at the house. And as all this is going on, credit card delinquencies have hit their highest rate since 2010. And auto delinquencies are at their all-time highs. Consumer delinquencies are rising. Guys, unemployment is only 4.3% right now. The last time we had delinquencies at this level, 10% of people were out of work. That's not happening right now. This is during a supposedly good time for employment, or at least not a horrible time. I know that it's this no hire, no fire environment, but most people are working, even if they're bullshit temporary jobs, and everybody is behind on their credit cards. People are behind on their car payments. We had Elon Musk just lost in court. That was the big trial between Elon Musk and Sam Altman. I've been following this one kind of casually in the background. I had high hopes. I knew they weren't going to turn this around. There's just too much money on it. No judge or jury is going to rule and undo a $1 trillion AI startup. But I tell you, even though Elon Musk lost in court, mostly because of the statute of limitations, he waited too long to sue. Sam Altman was the loser in this case because there's 3 days of testimony under oath of executives talking about what an epic freaking dirtbag he is. And now he's going to be the CEO of one of the largest publicly traded companies in the world just as soon as he manages to go public, which supposedly is any day now, but we don't hear anything about that. Probably because they're not willing to open their books yet, because once they open their books and file that S-1, we'll all be able to see under the hood and realize just how bad the accounting is over there. And a little something for my BRICS guys today. We got Japan and China sold loads of U.S. treasuries in the first quarter. Chinese was a little surprising, almost $40 billion of U.S. treasuries. They're down to about $650 billion, which is down from like $1.8 trillion a few years ago. Although there's always that question of shadow treasury holdings. The Chinese buy them through third parties like Belgium and things like that for some reason. I don't know why they do that. But Japan, we know why they sold their U.S. treasuries. They had to defend their currency, the yen. They needed to dump dollars in order to do that because the rising price of oil is causing currency crises all over the world. Another place that's causing a currency crisis is in India, who just banned silver imports, or they restricted silver imports. Maybe it wasn't an outright ban, but a lot of silver is not going to be getting into the country. And this is after last week when India doubled the tariffs on gold and silver. And that was just a few days after the Indian Prime Minister or President Narendra Modi went on TV and told Indians, don't buy gold. They're doing everything they can to deny people the off-ramp of precious metals and force people to stay. And that Indian rupee, which I'll show you, the chart is just losing money every single day. And last but not least, we had the Bitcoin ATM company has gone bankrupt. You ever walk past one of those Bitcoin ATMs and then hopefully not stop there because the fees were outrageous, just highway robbery? Yeah, the company that ran those, they went bankrupt. So that's probably a decent amount of Bitcoin. It's going to be hitting the market as a result of that bankruptcy. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Hey, don't forget that like button and a subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every business day. And right now, the S&P 500 is lower once again by 23 points or about a third of 1% in the red. The Dow is down about 80 points here, 0.15% lower. And the NASDAQ is also down about 181 points, about two-thirds of a percent lower for the NASDAQ. So NASDAQ leading the way lower this morning. The U.S. dollar is a little bit stronger here, up 27 basis points at 99.25. And looking over at the bond market, we've got not a lot of movement in yields. But, you know, it's important to note that yields are not making a lot of movement at the moment after a big move up. The fact that bond yields are holding these levels is significant in my opinion. We saw a rapid rise with the start of the war. We broke out from a level last week that had historically been when the guy at Axios would come and jawbone some BS about a peace deal and take oil prices and treasuries lower. We've broken out of that level now. And now we're sitting here at a much higher level and we're holding here. The U.S. 30-year, 5.15. It's only up a half a point this morning, but 5.15, significant there. The 10-year at 4.63, again, higher, not even by one basis point. It's not the move it's making today. It's the fact that it's holding here that is significant. And we're pretty much at the high of the morning, by the way, on that yield. The 2-year yield is at 4.089. That's lower by a fraction of a point. And the 1 month is down by almost 3 points at 3.624. Why the 1 month is down, I couldn't tell you because those rate cuts are not coming. The CME futures are pricing in virtually no chance or they're pricing in absolutely no chance of any rate cuts through the end of the year. We've actually now got a 50% chance that they hike before the end of the year. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're lower again this morning, only a couple bucks though, $76,892. That's down by about 50 bucks. Watch that 50-day moving average. We're coming up on that level here. We had an interesting development yesterday. Massive crypto ATM company Bitcoin Depot is shutting down as the whole industry collapses. And by the whole industry, we're talking about the Bitcoin ATM industry is collapsing, not the whole crypto industry. I'm not a crypto doomer. I'm also not a Bitcoin maxi. I'm somewhere in between. Right now, I'm leaning towards doomer because we're in Bitcoin winter, and I don't think we're going to hit the bottom for a couple of months yet. I think we have another significant leg down in Bitcoin before we bottom out for this cycle. But yeah, they're talking about the Bitcoin ATM industry is basically dead in the water here. Bitcoin Depot, once the largest network of crypto ATMs in North America, is calling it quits following mounting legal scrutiny, and a state-by-state crackdown on Bitcoin teller machines over fraud concerns. The company, which operated kiosks where customers could exchange cash for Bitcoin, announced on Monday that it had filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is winding down its operations. It operated 9,276 kiosks across the U.S. and Canada. In a press release, the company said its network of ATMs has already been taken offline and that it plans to sell its assets through a court-supervised process. Those assets will include probably a lot of Bitcoin that's going to be put up for sale, so possibly some selling pressure. Although this company wasn't that big, the market should be able to absorb that selling pressure. Bitcoin Depot CEO Alex Holmes said in a press release that the current regulatory environment had made the company's business model unsustainable. The news arrives as Bitcoin Depot is facing lawsuits from the attorneys general in Massachusetts and Iowa over allegations that it helped facilitate crypto scams. Well, that one is, well, it's gone, guys. Bitcoin Depot stock, it's down 28% pre-market after falling 73% yesterday. This one's a goose egg here. It's still trading at 56 cents, but there's not going to be anything left by the time they settle all their legal disputes. Let's just check in on the oil chart real quick here. Right now, we're at $103.26. As I suspected yesterday, that story about the U.S. offering sanctions relief appears to have been a nothing burger, just fake news. A few hours after that story broke, the U.S. denied the story, and oil prices went right back up to about $103, $104, where they currently sit here. Just another example of do not trade headlines, or don't trade on headlines in this oil crisis, guys, because the headlines are largely doo-doo. That's unfortunately the case. Also, speaking of headlines, we did have the headline late yesterday that President Trump had put off the next bombing campaign against the Iranians at the request of the Saudis, the UAE, and Qatar, and all the Gulf Coast countries. Okay, sure. Oil still above the 50-day moving average. Very little change there. Now, looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is lower by $45 this morning, or about 1% lower, $45.21 for spot gold. Spot silver is at $75.60, lower by another $2 and change, or about 2.66%. But I do still like the shiny. It's just getting a little cheaper here. Copper is lower by 1.4%. Platinum, 1.7% lower. Palladium, almost 2.9% lower. And we just talked about WTI crude hovering near $103. But back on silver for a moment here, currently trading below $76. We got this one from India. India restricts most silver imports to cut the import bill and support the rupee. No silver for you if you live in India, apparently. India has curbed imports of silver in nearly all forms with immediate effect, according to a government order issued on Saturday. This story's a couple days old. I missed this one yesterday, but this is significant as the world's biggest consumer of the metal seeks to rein in shipments and ease pressure on the rupee. The restriction is expected to reduce silver imports and tighten domestic supplies, potentially lifting premiums in the local market. But lower demand from India, which meets more than 80% of its consumption through imports, could weigh on global prices. So India is trying to defend the rupee. And so they're I don't know if this is an outright ban or they're just banning most of it. They're saying they're curbing or restricting imports. So what is this going to do? Because silver imports almost, or India imports almost all its silver. This means you're going to have silver start to trade at a premium to global prices in India because there's artificial shortages created geographically there. And at the same time, that lack of demand from India is going to suppress global prices. So you're going to see an arbitrage open up, and you're probably going to see a lot of smugglers try to capitalize on that arbitrage. But again, this is all being done to support the Indian rupee, which is falling because of energy prices. And Indian retailers raise fuel prices again in response to Iran war. This is another increase for the price of gasoline, the price of fuel in India. It's only 1 rupee per liter, which is like not even a cent per gallon. But this is the second price increase in 2 weeks, or I'm sorry, second price increase in 1 week after they went 4 years without touching prices. So India is still playing games trying to manage this fuel crisis. And look at what it's doing to their currency. This is USD INR. And we're going all the way back to last February here. You can see this currency has just done nothing but bleed out for the better part of a year. And it's starting to accelerate now ever since the war in Iran broke out. 96.5 rupees to the dollar. And guys, if you zoom out, this just gets worse and worse. I don't know how this Indian economy continues humming along when their currency just does nothing but lose value day in, day out, year after year. And now they are restricting silver imports, increasing tariffs on gold, discouraging people from buying gold, all to try to keep their currency stable. All right, now let's talk about the big one here, this FOMO in South Korea. And all I can say, guys, is no FOMO. All right, we don't FOMO here on this channel. Koreans cash out insurance and deposits to chase stock rally. If only there were signs, what stage, all those sayings. This is a very much what stage kind of moment here. South Koreans are cashing out of insurance policies and savings deposits, chasing higher returns by piling into local stocks' breakneck rally. Policy surrender payouts at the country's three largest life insurers, Samsung, Hanwha, and Kyobo, reached 4.9 trillion won, or about $3.3 billion in the first quarter, up 16.3% from a year earlier, according to industry data on Monday. The increase suggests more policyholders are willing to terminate insurance contracts early, even at a loss, in search of higher returns in the stock market. Policy surrender value refers to the amount returned when a contract is canceled before maturity, typically less than total premiums paid. The rise was sharper in savings-type insurance policies, where surrender payouts jumped 23.2% on the year to 2.29 trillion won. Savings-type products are designed to return premiums and interest at maturity, either as a lump sum or annuity. The pickup and cancellation signals households are moving away from stable savings products and toward riskier assets. They're not just selling their life insurance to buy stocks. They're also borrowing money. Korea's margin debt hits record 36 trillion won, regulator warns. This one published just this morning in Seoul Economic Daily. South Korea's margin debt has surged to record levels even as the KOSPI tumbled sharply after touching the 8,000 mark, raising concerns that volatility could intensify when single stock leveraged ETFs launch on the 27th of this month. And friends, don't let friends buy single stock levered ETFs, all right? Take the keys, call a cab, make a stand. We don't let our friends do that here on this channel. They are fee mechanisms that make the issuers a lot of money and everybody else gets hosed. According to the Korea Financial Investment Association on Wednesday, the outstanding balance of margin loans stood at 36.39 trillion won as of the previous day. The figure represents a jump of 8.9 trillion won, or about 33% from the start of the year. They're borrowing money, they're selling their insurance, all to pile into stocks. And look at the stocks they're piling into. Yep. Yeah, look at a chart like this. And then we're like, yeah, up here, we're going to sell grandma's annuity and empty out our savings and then borrow a bunch of money to buy stocks. And what do those stocks start doing just as soon as we do that? Well, they start heading lower. Why? Because this whole rally has been created by the accounting fraud. That is the AI bubble bidding up memory prices. It is not sustainable. Everybody knows this. Memory prices are not going to stay up here forever. They will come crashing down. This looks like the chart of any shitcoin or Bitcoin treasury company or some company that just decides we're going to put AI in our name. We all know how this one ends. And look, it's they're telegraphing that end already. Seagate leads memory sell-off as CEO says it would take too long to build new factories, which means the bubble would burst before the factory is done. Shares of memory chip maker Seagate closed down more than 6% Monday, leading a group-wide sell-off after comments from CEO Dave Mosley raised concerns that it won't be able to meet the soaring demand fueled by the artificial intelligence build-out. Mosley was asked at a JP Morgan conference on Monday what it would take to add unit or floor capacity to produce more chips in Seagate's factories. If we took the teams off and started building new factories or bringing up new machines, that would just take too long. You would end up with more capacity, but then you'd slow the rate of growth on that technology, Mosley said. In other words, by the time we got that factory built, the bubble would have burst. Guys, they're saying it out loud here. They know this isn't sustainable. They're not going to go on TV and say it's not sustainable because they're CEOs and they have to act in the best interest of their shareholders. And a CEO is not going to go on TV and be like, yeah, my stock is in a bubble, but it is. Seagate stock was down almost 7% yesterday. It's down another 2.7% today. Again, this is all relative. Year to date, the stock is up 169%, but it's also fallen about 11% over the last 5 days. And that's as South Koreans leverage everything in order to pile into stocks at the top. No FOMO. And guys, keep an eye on this public backlash. This is significant, and it is getting louder and louder every day. We got an election coming up in a couple of months. This is going to be a campaign issue, but it's going to be a campaign issue where both sides are trying to outmaneuver each other to be more opposed to data centers than the other guy. Both parties are in agreement on this one. The American rebellion against AI is gaining steam. Booed commencement speakers, blocked data centers, plummeting poll numbers, fast-growing industry has a faster-growing crisis. The only thing growing faster than the AI industry may be Americans' negative feelings about it, as former Google CEO Eric Schmidt saw on Friday. Delivering a commencement address at University of Arizona, Schmidt told students the technological transformation wrought by AI will be larger, faster, and more consequential than what came before. Like some other graduation speakers mentioning AI, Schmidt was met with a chorus of boos. In one poll after another in recent weeks, respondents have overwhelmingly voiced concern about AI. A challenge to claims by industry executives that their technology would gain popularity by improving people's lives. It hasn't. It's just flooded the internet with slop. Consumers resent energy price jumps exacerbated by the spread of data centers. Workers fear widespread job losses. Parents worry about AI undermining education and harming children's mental health. In recent months, the wave of anger has brought protests, swayed election results, and even spurred isolated acts of violence. Somebody threw a Molotov cocktail at Sam Altman's house. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, but still, don't do that. And here's Google CEO trying to that fake smile and his corporate hand gestures as the crowd boos him like crazy in the background. While AI rejectionism has put wind in the sails of some campaigns, for AI companies and builders of the data centers that serve them, it's creating an acute crisis. Investors have staked tens of billions of dollars in capital on the ability of OpenAI, Anthropic, and other companies to get access to ever larger quantities of computing power, and they in turn have pledged much of that capital to fund data center construction. The companies are spending hundreds of millions of dollars in the midterm elections to help fight the backlash. You can already see that phony effort to label anybody opposed to data centers as Chinese spies or agents of the Chinese government. Nice try, Silicon Valley. Everybody knows that's fake. But all over the country, community-level organizations have been succeeding in blocking data center projects. Local opposition blocked or delayed at least 48 projects valued at some $156 billion last year. That's according to Data Center Watch, an organization tracking the trend. A record of 20 were canceled in just the first quarter of this year because of local backlash. Figures from climate media outlet and data provider Heatmap show dozens more are currently facing similar obstacles on top of obstructions because of permitting snafus and equipment shortages. The backlash against data centers is getting louder and louder. Oh, it's a good thing we didn't stake, you know, the whole freaking economy on this thing. Oh, it's going to end great. You're going to love it. Meanwhile, Home Depot sales fall short on lackluster housing recovery. Another story about the frozen housing market and consumers who are stressed here. A key gauge of Home Depot sales missed expectations in the latest quarter as muted housing demand and high borrowing costs limited consumer spending on improvement projects. Sales at locations open at least a year rose just 0.6% during the 3 months ended May 3rd, slightly below average analyst estimates compiled by Bloomberg. Earnings per share, excluding some items, though, did beat expectations. Home Depot's business has been hit by elevated interest rates and high housing prices, which have sparked a pullback in home purchases and upgrade projects over the past 3 years, said Jack, as he's having his living room remodeled next door here. But instead of extensive remodels that require financing and large amounts of tools and material, Americans are taking on smaller projects such as painting and gardening. Home Depot shares were little changed during the peak trading on Tuesday, during pre-market trading Tuesday. External factors may continue to pressure results. Following a brief dip in February, mortgage rates have risen in tandem with energy prices. As the war in Iran creates new apprehension about inflation, existing home sales have remained flat at the start of the important spring selling season, while consumer sentiment has deteriorated. And Home Depot earnings, it was kind of a nothing burger. The stock's now down 2.17%. Apparently, investors are waking up to those earnings. It was previously up about a third of a percent. For whatever reason, Yahoo Finance won't load the chart for me. Thanks for nothing, Yahoo. But year to date, the stock is down about 13%, adding to those losses this morning. And shout out to the Kobayashi letter who posted this one. We're talking about consumer credit delinquencies. There's some pretty bad numbers in here, guys. Credit card serious delinquencies rose 0.4 percentage points in Q1 of 2026 to 13.1%, the highest since the fourth quarter of 2010. And I would add that unemployment was a hell of a lot higher in that quarter as well. This is only below the 2010 peak of 13.7% in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. Again, we had unemployment upwards of 10% during that crisis. Since Q3 of 2022, serious credit card delinquencies have surged 5.5 percentage points, even larger than the 3.9-point increase in 2007 to 2010. Furthermore, student loan debt 90 days plus delinquent jumped 0.7 percentage points in Q1 to 10.3%, the highest since the first quarter of 2020 when they basically banned student loan delinquencies or banned reporting of them. Auto loan serious delinquencies increased 0.4 percentage points to 5.6%, the highest on record. Auto delinquencies right now are even higher than they were during the GFC. And I would add there's a lot of speculation that auto loan delinquencies are being hidden by some of the less ethical players in the market. Carvana. But I think the auto loan delinquencies are even higher than that. U.S. consumers are falling behind debt at a crisis pace. And again, this is as unemployment is only sitting here at 4.3%, guys. The blue line, there's your credit card debt. Here's the GFC high. We came down and now we have risen and we are now almost, we're just barely below the high that we saw during the GFC. Student loan delinquencies, of course, as soon as we bought back student loan reporting, that number made a vertical move up and it looks like it's getting ready to head higher. I think you probably still have a lot of blue states that are hiding those delinquency numbers because a lot of people just think they shouldn't have to pay back their college loans. I guess they didn't quite understand what the word loan meant when they borrowed the money, implying that you would pay it back someday, but I digress. Also, auto loan delinquencies, all-time highs down here, higher than the peak in the GFC. The two outliers, though, home equity revolving and mortgage delinquencies still remain historically low, very low even. So, yeah, we're at GFC crisis levels in some of these other categories, but the big ones, mortgages, still low. They are rising as things like these FHA programs and forbearance programs drop off and expire, and then those delinquencies or those delinquencies and foreclosures start to work through, but still very low here. And that you'd expect it to be low because unemployment is still relatively low. This, I don't know what you do with this. And this also doesn't include BNPL debt, which I think has even higher delinquencies than that. The consumer's just not in good shape here, guys. Meanwhile, we got this one. It was a long shot, but I don't know. Better luck next time, Elon. Musk loses OpenAI court battle after jury finds he waited too long to sue. It wasn't the merits of the case. It was the statute of limitations. California jury has tossed out Elon Musk's high-profile lawsuit against OpenAI and its boss, Sam Altman. In a unanimous verdict, the jury agreed that Musk had waited too long to file his lawsuit, leaving all of his claims essentially expired. Musk had accused Altman of breaching a nonprofit contract by shifting the ChatGPT maker to a for-profit company after Musk donated $38 million early in OpenAI's history. As the jury found that this statute of limitations, a set time frame for when legal accusations need to be made in order to be considered, had lapsed for Musk's claims of breach of charitable trust and unjust enrichment, the jury was not required to consider the merits of his claims. So it looks like Sam Altman and Greg Brockman made tens of billions of dollars doing charity work, and it appears to be totally legit because Elon waited too long to sue. Why did Elon wait too long to sue? Because, well, he didn't have a rival AI company years ago, so he had no reason to sue years ago, no incentive to do it. Look, I mean, I'm not really fond of either side of this argument here. That being said, Elon Musk is out for Elon Musk. He does cool stuff. Sam Altman is just a degenerate POS. And the more I learn about Sam Altman, the more I just realize what a remarkable piece of shit that man is. And so I hate to see him winning in court, even though I'm certainly not the president of the Elon Musk fan club by any standard. Meanwhile, for you BRICS guys out there, Japan and China lead foreign government retreat from U.S. treasuries as Gulf War fallout stokes currency fears. They were dumping USTs in Q1. Foreign governments cut U.S. treasuries in March as the Middle East war forced central banks to liquidate dollar reserves, defending local currencies against an energy shock that sent exchange rates tumbling. China reduced its holdings to $652.3 billion, down roughly 6% from February to its lowest level since September of 2008. It's according to Treasury data released Monday stateside. Japan, the single largest foreign holder of U.S. government debt, shed approximately $47 billion to $1.19 trillion overall. Overall foreign holdings fell to $9.25 trillion in March from $9.49 trillion. So significant selling of U.S. treasuries here. We know why Japan sold. Japan sold to defend the yen. Their currency was falling. They had to sell their U.S. treasuries to get dollars and then sell those dollars to get yen in the open market to try to strengthen their currency, which was falling because the price of oil was going up so much and Japan is hopelessly dependent on oil. See also the Indian rupee and all the things they're doing with silver and fuel prices over in India to defend the currency. What else we have here? The sell-off in foreign holdings also reflected falling bond prices as foreign investors logged $142.1 billion valuation loss on long-term treasury holdings in March alone. Remember, rising interest rates means falling bond values. Bucking the trend, though, the UK added $29.6 billion to its holdings, up to $926.9 billion in March as several smaller holders pulled back. It's also worth pointing out, guys, that China has their shadow holdings here. China's been gradually reducing its direct treasury exposure since peak holdings of $1.3 trillion in 2013. But analysts have long argued official figures undercount its true footprint in U.S. debt markets. Custodial centers like Belgium and Luxembourg are widely seen as conduits for Chinese sovereign wealth and state-linked investment. Chinese, for whatever reason, like to buy U.S. treasuries using Belgium as a middleman. I don't know why. I don't know why a lot of things happen in China, but they do. Shout out to David Lee on X, who posted some of this. This is showing the countries and what they did with their U.S. treasury holdings in March. Again, Japan was the big one, dumping $47.7 billion, 3.8% of their total holdings as they defended their currency. The Brits, they were the exception, adding almost $30 billion. The Chinese sold $41 billion that we could see, almost 6% of their official holdings. Also noteworthy, Taiwan sold 4% of their holdings, down $12.7 billion. Taiwan, Singapore, India, all countries hopelessly dependent on energy imports. They had to sell their USTs to get the dollars to buy the fuel that got more expensive because of the war in Iran. You also had some of these GCC countries. Saudi Arabia sold 6.7% of theirs. And the UAE sold 4.8% of theirs. And rounding out the list, we had South Korea sold $4.1 billion, about 3%. So a lot of countries selling U.S. treasuries, leading to those higher interest rates. That, I think, is one of the reasons why we're watching President Trump try to jawbone oil markets right now, because the stock market is dependent on the bond market. And at the moment, the bond market is dependent on the price of oil, because higher oil prices is forcing countries to sell bonds, driving their values lower and their interest rates higher, which threatens to make the government insolvent from higher interest rates, as well as bankrupt AI bubbles that are issuing special purpose vehicle debt to build data centers, consumers who are already struggling with high loads, debt loads and high interest rates, a frozen housing market, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Whew, there's a lot going on there. I got to remember to breathe in between these little tirades. Anyway, guys, I want to thank you for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm on the way out. Thank you so much to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.